actually give a whole talk about treating our work like an athletic event. And when you see it that way, it doesn't mean you don't have fun. And I mean, having a shift drink and hanging with people you just did battle with should never be taken away.
But I mean, what's wrong with, like, calling that out a little bit? It almost feels like our industry is growing up a little bit. And I know it's easy to hold on to, like, it's easy to hold on to what was and to really glorify it. And I liked the School of Hard Knocks. I liked how hard life was. I felt like I was doing something not a lot of people could handle. But it doesn't mean it needs to be the norm. And I think to have that stuff challenged, I don't think is that awful.
This collection of the greatest athletes in battle, traveling from one end of the United States to the other, is what big time is all about.
If you just shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.
Welcome to Mama Food Live, number one live digital audio industry show for chefs by chefs. Hosted by multi-time Food Network winner and award-winning chef, Chef Plum, and culinary veteran, star of the Food Saver commercial, Chef Jeff. So wrap, date, and rotate because the boys are about to set your Nissan claws. Here are the Good Brothers.
Oh, yeah, ladies and gentlemen. It is that time for Plum Love Foods Live. We're very excited to be hanging out with you tonight, man. Super excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll tell you right now, man, it's just going to be awesome. We have a great program tonight, man. A great, great program tonight. We're talking all about barbecue and how food can save lives. That's what we're talking about here.
Absolutely.
I was about to bring you in, Jeffy. Joined, of course, by the Good Brothers, Jeff and Dan. We're hanging out tonight. It's kind of crazy to see, boys, how food can change lives. We know food can make you happy. We know food can make you sad. We know, but food can also save lives.
Well, it can sustain you. Food's an important part of everybody's life.
We're going to talk to a man tonight who's fed hundreds of thousands of people during emergency situations, Dan.
Absolutely. Food brings people together. Food brings people life. Food is a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. And we're going to hang out with Tony Olive from Operation Barbecue Relief here in just a few minutes. He's a good brother. He did our Santa Q event with us, Jeff. You remember?
Absolutely. Good brother Tony was killing it. He brought his trailer, threw on all those briskets. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome, a lot of fun. Guy. Him and Grill Mama helped us out with that, which was really fun. And Tony brought his big old truck up with all this barbecue stuff. Dan, that was awesome.
It was awesome. He came in. He threw down. It wasn't a question. He's just in there handling his business. One man show. Just did his thing.
A little one man, one woman. Grill Mama was there. We helped him out a little bit, but yeah. He didn't really need our help, did he?
Well, I'm saying his whole trailer situation. Like, he came through with the trailer. He had this whole get up. Like, it was incredible. Of course, everyone came through and helped with him. But I mean, I feel like he could just go anywhere and just do anything like he's doing now.
Yeah, totally. Well, we're excited to talk to him in a few minutes about a few things. But in the meantime, boys, I got to be honest. I've been talking all day. Jeffy, I talked to you this morning. I talked to him this morning. We're doing a whole episode of the show for NPR. The show is called Seasoned. Jeff, have you ever heard of that one?
I have heard of Seasoned. It's a great show. I pick it up on my Apple Podcasts.
Ooh, nice. Also airs on WNPR. Anyway, we're doing a Thanksgiving episode, Dan, where I've got some people who submitted some recipes, and we're kind of bringing them in, talking the recipes, but the recipes are Thanksgiving sides. Because, you know, it'll air Thanksgiving Day. It might be fun while you're cooking to hear about some side dishes. I don't know. I like the idea.
I think Thanksgiving sides are where it really comes. That's the bread and butter. That's where you can be creative, because a lot of times it's the turkey. And everybody does their own turkey, does a little thing with the turkey, but it's some sides that really show, you know, a little creativity. People can kind of bring their own thing to the table. A lot of cultures, too, coming together on Thanksgiving, throwing their little influences into it.
Well, I tell you, I talked to my last interview today, boys, was with the one, the only Marty Duncan, who we all love and adore on this program. And Marty was telling us all about her dressing, and from her southern roots, explain the difference between dressing and stuffing, Jeffy. It's pretty funny. It's definitely a worthwhile listen just for that.
Yeah, I need to hear that because I have no idea the difference.
It's pretty funny. She goes, stuffing is made in a pan, Chef Plum. It's not made in the burr, and you make it ahead of time.
Maybe in Alabama, I mean, where I grew up, stuffing came in a box.
Oh, no, excuse me. Dressing, not stuffing. We don't make stuffing down south. We make dressing.
Dressing.
She's the best. I love her. She's so fun to talk to. But yeah, it's going to be a great episode. But nonetheless, I've been talking literally all day. I think I did 9 interviews plus 2 other Skype interviews I had to do. I'm sorry, Zoom. So I'm going to lean on you guys tonight because I'm just tired of talking.
Wow. Right. I never thought that day would come when you'd be tired of talking.
And that's our Dan Monroe moment on the show for the night. Thank you for joining us, Dan. We appreciate you. Fuck you, dude. Let me tell you something.
I love hearing your voice. I just surprising that I would hear you say you're tired of talking. I mean, that's just what you do, cooking and talking. It's your thing, man.
This voice has brought us to where we are, has brought us together, my friend. Come on.
Hey, I'm down. I'll do whatever you need. I'll hold it down. I'm there for you, man. I love
what if do, I bro. Need my back waxed?
Hey, I got you, bro.
All right.
I got giant pads. We'll just put it on there, wax that bad boy, rip it right off.
I'll take pictures.
Be a good time. Actually, shit, I think we should do that now.
What's going on, boys? A little back waxing. If you ain't waxing, you ain't sexy.
We'll TikTok that shit.
Jesus. Hey, there's a bunch of middle-aged men waxing each other's backs. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's called The Bear Den. I've seen that show.
Jesus, Jeffy. God damn it.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
Oh, my
God. On The Bear Den.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, if you want to join us on The Bear Den, you know where to find us. Jeez, that's terrible. Dude, I don't want to do that at all. That's awful.
Hashtag, I got you back.
Yes, sir. Great show last week. Enjoyed talking to a good friend, David Weatherly. But, yo, every time he's on the show, he tells us some new story that freaks me out for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
That story about that fucking monster in the basement of that restaurant that comes crawling out. Are you kidding
me?
Yeah.
The crawler.
It's just, yeah. No. I don't want anything to do with that.
I'd invoke the power of Jesus Christ. And
well, I'm glad you brought that up, Jeffy, because I was going to ask you, how does one, a man of your, you know, godly stature, handle a situation like that if it comes upon you?
I pray.
You just stop and pray.
Yeah.
Good news, Dan. If that happens to the three of us, the monster will attack Jeff. That'll buy us time because he'll be busy praying while you and I can run our ass out of there.
Hell yeah. I'm out.
Weapon formed against me shall prosper.
I'm not sure what he just said, but I think that was some shit Spock used to say.
Hey, you got holy water gun full of holy water, you'd be all right.
Yeah.
I don't think that works, he said.
Let me tell you something right now.
Only if you believe. It only works for you because you believe.
That's right. Super Soaker. Get the old school Super Soaker. So, by the way, that movie was on at Good Old Days Pizza the other night. We were having some pizza and the Lost Boys was on. And what a great movie that is.
Hell yeah. Corey Haynes? Or is it Corey
Feldman?
Corey
Haynes and Corey Feldman. Both of them.
Such a good movie.
And the dog, Nanut.
Classic.
That's a great movie. And they fill the Super Soakers up with holy water. It's badass. Jeffy, did you watch this movie or no?
No.
You've never seen The Lost Boys?
What the fuck?
Really?
I mean, it was like such a long time ago, and I don't know if I watched the whole thing because I'm a man.
Keith or Sutherland?
Yeah, you listen. Jack Bauer's a vampire. It's badass.
Yeah.
It's fucking dope.
I felt like after the railroad track scene, I tuned out.
What?
That's the wrong movie, man.
No, there is a scene.
They're like headbanging and they're on the head.
Yeah.
And they jump up. And they all fall. And then, you know, they're vampires, but they're not going to kill you. They just want to make love to you in a weird teen sex pile or something. I don't know. I didn't like it.
All right. First of all, teen sex pile was my band in 10th grade. Second of all, this movie is the best at the very end when it has, the Home Alone ending. When, you know, the vampires come to the house and they're all ready to fight them. It's awesome.
Oh, actually, I do remember that part because the two Corys, right? They have like all like the stupid weapons, and like they're like
they're all geared up. The dog like throws the vampire into the bathtub full of garlic
water. You know, it was like Goonies with vampires. I didn't get it.
Kinda. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just makes it better.
I think so too.
It's bad.
They don't make movies like that anymore. Instead, we get bullshit like Eternals. It's a bad movie. Like Eternals.
It's a bad movie. You know why they didn't remake it yet? Because it sucked back then.
No, it's going to be awesome.
They only remake good movies.
Dan, while we're on movies, before we get to our guest, dude, the more and more I watch and learn about Eternals, the more let down I am and the more I don't want to see it.
Well, I already got my ticket, so I'm going Sunday.
I mean,
and I'm going Monday.
That's not how you like. I want your opinion. Like, you just told me you got tickets.
Well, I'm excited to see it. I keep seeing shit, but fuck what they say. I don't give a shit. People say stupid stuff all the time. Like, look,
you know what the problem is?
Like the Lost Boys.
Wait, I'm gonna tell you why I don't like this movie. I think I hate the fact that Angelina Jolie is in it.
I know, but I think she's gonna die. That's why I want to see it.
No business in a Marvel movie. Same thing with what's her name, who plays not Circe, but.
Oh my god, like I don't remember her name. I love her though. She's so sexy.
The really attractive Spanish woman. I can't think of her name.
Yeah.
Hayek?
Yes.
Salma Hayek.
Yeah, but I don't want Salma Hayek in my fucking Marvel movie. Go do a movie with Robert De Niro. Don't fucking be in a Marvel movie.
I know what you're saying. It has like that DC vibe where they put a bunch of people with names. But I don't think they're going to be as big a part in the movie as all the other characters. I think it's going to be.
Giggle Mesh?
I think it's gonna be good.
Yo,
I don't know.
Did you hear this? That the lead character, the guy who plays not Jon Snow, but the other one, not the Black Knight, but the other guy. He's like he plays like Hermes or something like that. What's his name? But anyway, he has a flap in his front of his costume because his junk was so big that Disney didn't want, like, they had to adjust his costume because he had a big giant dick print.
First of all, the term dick print is amazing.
You never heard that?
No, but I love it.
It's one of my favorite rap songs. He goes, "I don't got FedEx, but you could see my print. I'm bald."
Awesome. Every time I post a picture of me in my sweats, I get that hashtag from some chick.
Did you do it on purpose, though, to see how long it takes to give you that shit?
Yeah, he does.
I don't know. I mean, listen. I'm just talking about, we talk about Marvel movies occasionally on here. I'm not excited, Dan. I'm not even sure if I'm going to go see it. Like, I don't care. Like,
I don't know. I'll let you know. I think it could be good. I heard it's supposed to be really good. It's leading up to it was a lot of excitement. And then they did the premiere and then there was a lot of mixed reviews. And I think
the only Marvel movie that has a rotten rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. But whatever. But that's now. That's just the people who saw it. Whatever it is. What, 200 people?
Well, apparently it was so bad that it's being pulled from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Kuwait.
No, that's because there's a gay dude in it. It's the first openly gay Marvel superhero. The black dude. I don't know his name.
Yeah, they don't like gay people there, Jeffy.
They're gay.
That's where Jesus came from, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
No, not from Kuwait. Get out of here, guys.
I'm pretty sure.
Dude, don't you ever read any Bible stories at all?
Long time ago.
I was born in Bethel.
Connecticut? Right up the road from me?
No.
302? I didn't know that. Damn. I'm one town away from Jesus.
Bethlehem.
Hey, from now on, Dan, you remember I'm one town away from Jesus, all right?
Oh, yeah.
Fuck you guys are terrible people.
Let me tell you something right now. I bet Jesus goes to fucking City Pizza over there. That shit's garbage.
I'm looking at all these guys. I gotta say, Angelina Jolie is a scary lady now. Doesn't look good. I'm feeling this Gemma Chan gal though. That's a nice pick.
But I don't want Angelina Jolie in my Marvel movie.
Why not?
Because she's Angelina Jolie. Like, who cares? You think she studied the character? I doubt it.
Do you know that Harry Styles is in it? No, I hate it.
I do know, and that I hate that so much, too. I don't want it to... Dan, I don't know if you know who he is. I'm not going to say, but...
I know... Oh, no, I don't know who he is, and I'm mad. I didn't know he was in it, and I'm... Well, at least that'll get my daughter excited about it.
I'll tell you who he is.
No,
he's
don't...
Star Fox.
Jeff.
No!
Jeff, what are you doing? Don't do that to Dan.
Why? It says that.
No, Jeff.
It says it everywhere.
Stop. You're giving away like end like credit scenes to Dan right now.
Oh, hold on! Spoiler alert.
sorry.
You just ruined the movie for Dan. He's not going now. He's getting a refund.
Damn. I don't even know who that is, but it made me laugh to say it. I don't know why. I thought that was a funny thing to be called in a movie.
That's interesting, though. All right. Whatever. It don't matter. I'm going to go see it. Whatever. It's just another movie.
Well, yeah. I want to see it just because they all connect. So even if this one is shitty, it's going to tell some sort of story that's going to connect to the next one. You know what I mean? So it's like...
I'm far more excited for the Hawkeye series at the end of the month.
Hell yeah.
I'm fucking Spider-Man.
Dude, yeah. Moon Knight. When the fuck is Moon Knight coming? That shit looks fire.
I think it's a year away from that, I think. All right, boys. Enough superhero talk because we have a superhero on the program tonight. And I'm excited to get to him and have him tell us all about how to save lives. And just as we come back from break, Tony Alla from Operation Barbecue, a.k.a. OBR, is going to be joining us. It's your boy Chef Jeff, Chef Plum, and the one and only Chef Dan right here on Plum Love Foods Live. Stay right there. When we come back, we're going to be joined. Tell them, Jeffy, who's joining us?
Tonight, we are being joined. What?
I already did all that. You're supposed to say Tony Olive from Operation Barbecue, and then I hit the commercial.
Tony Olive from Operation Barbecue. Timestamp that. Let's try.
All right, Operation Barbecue Relief. Tony Olive will be here in a minute. We'll stay right there. We'll be right back, guys.
Oh yeah, Dave. Ergo Chef knives, the knives used by so many culinary professionals, including all of us here on the program.
From the entry level Prodigy series to the super sharp Shinzui made from Japanese V10 steel. Ergo Chef has something for everyone.
Hey, listen, every single day I use my Pro Series Santuco, and I love it, man. You've seen my knife bag, haven't you? I mean, I've got like three of them in there. It's a great quality knife made by great quality people. And if my word's not enough, just ask guys like Myron Mixon, Guy Fieri, Michael Simon, and tons more.
Tell them you heard about them on Plum Love Foods by using promo code PLUM for a great discount on everything in your order. Knives so sharp, even the great city of Detroit approves.
Get some new gear at ErgoChef.com. Promo code PLUM, that's ErgoChef.com.
Plum Love Foods Live right here on a Thursday. It's your boy Chef Plum, Chef Jeff, Chef Dan hanging out with you. I'll tell you what, boys, our guest coming up here in a second is a gentleman I have an immense amount of respect for. He is a barbecue master, probably one of the nicest pit masters I've ever met, actually. A lot of times these pit guys, they're not so nice to everybody. But Tony, he's an incredibly nice guy, an incredibly talented guy. He's saving lives with food. And Jeffy, do you remember? He's a firefighter. He's also saving lives in real life. This man not only cooks over fire, smokes over fire, eats fire, he also runs headfirst directly into fire, Dan, while carrying a fucking axe, and that makes him awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the program from Operation Barbecue Relief, our good friend and good brother, the one, the only, Tony Oliver. There he is.
Yeah. How we doing?
Yeah.
How's everyone doing tonight?
Hey, man, how are you? Great to hear your voice. How's things?
Oh, doing great. We're down here in Vienna, Georgia at the Big Pig Jig. Setting up, where I'm cooking with my good buddy Daryl with Lang Smokers. I'm hanging out with our good buddy Myron Mixon.
Oh yeah,
he's gonna be cooking down here, and we're just getting ready, doing a little socializing tonight, and getting ready for some cooking whole hog tomorrow.
I like those name dropping you're doing there too, old Myron Mixon. Yeah. He's been a guest on this program with us before too, this one and the NPR show. I really like Myron; he's a good guy.
Yeah, just had dinner with Robbie Royal tonight from Rescue Smokers.
Oh,
been
yeah.
on Pitmasters many times.
How about
and
that?
A lot of big names down here. It's a stacked field this weekend, so it'll be interesting to see what goes on.
So, but how does your wife feel about you traveling as much as you do? Because I feel like every time I talk to you, you're on the road, about to go on the road, or you know, I mean, does your wife even like you anymore?
Yeah. We try to find a fine balance with me deploying and doing barbecue and home life. So I try to balance it out so I'm not doing too much at once. With the deployments, barbecue relief, that's kind of taken over from me doing barbecue. Barbie's kind of taking a backseat, and she understands the deployments because it's helping people, and it's doing good.
Well, before I jump into that, I want to talk a little bit about. I mean, you are a real life firefighter as well, right?
Yes. Yep. Been doing it for 30 years.
And what's your rank?
I'm fire marshal and my main job is fire marshal, but I'm also a firefighter and driver. So we, the department we work at, which is Long Ridge Fire Company in Stanford, we run one guy out of each station 24 hours a day. So we drive the truck, put the fire out, and we're supplemented by volunteers.
So you, I wasn't kidding when I was describing you as a gentleman who puts a hat on, grabs an axe, and runs headfirst into a fire.
Yep, and I investigate it.
You're like a fire CSI.
Start to finish.
How about that?
That's crazy. Pretty much.
I mean, Jeffy, this is a man's man right here.
He's the Renaissance man of flame and smoke.
That's what I'm talking about right there. So what's the worst fire you've ever been to, Tony?
Jesus, there's been so many. I mean, it's they're, you know, they vary in, you know, we do fires, we do medical calls. You know, it just really varies. I mean, everyone is so different.
Like, have you gone into a building and had that experience where the shit just explodes while you're in there?
We had a house fire that was in a, about a 10,000 square foot house. And wow. I was at the doorway feeding the line into the guys in the basement. And it actually backdraft happened on it. And that was pretty intense.
But are you wearing enough gear to protect you with that? Or how does that happen and you don't get hurt badly?
Yeah, the gear we have is, you know, we're fully encapsulated, you know, face mask, where every part of our body is covered. So we're, you know, good with that, as long as it's not, you know, certain, you get in too tense heat, it's not good, but you try not to get yourself into those situations.
Man, and I got to ask you too, just, I feel like, Jeffy, I'm like the fifth grader now talking to the fire, the fireman. What's the worst injury you've got on the job?
Knock on wood, just really, you know, back injuries.
Tony, if you tell me that you've burned yourself, if you tell me you burned yourself worse on your smoker than you have fighting fires, I'm going to call you a liar.
Yeah, no, I have, because I'm not wearing protective equipment when I'm doing my smokers. I got short sleeves on and, you know, shorts on and stuff like that. You know, I'm all protected head to toe in a fire. So, you know, if you get burned in a fire, you're really not wearing your gear properly. So, yeah, I've got more burns on my arms and stuff than my smokers than in a fire.
You know, Dan, it's like he's like a chef. Like, we just, I mean, we have no respect for the heat. We're like, yeah, it's hot, but I'm still going to grab it.
I'm thinking we need firefighter grade chef coats.
Yeah. Can we get some of those made, Tony? Some firefighter grade chef coats?
Oh, yeah. They're going to be hot, though. I mean, it's hot. It's hot in the kitchen as it is. And, you know, you can, they'll make them out of any material. They get Nomex's flame retardant, and that'll cover. It's like, you get the hot gloves that are flame retardant, and they protect you.
Oh, let's get some. We're going to get some of them. That's going to be fantastic. Well, Tony, all joking aside, man, Operation Barbecue Relief, OBR, as you call it. How long have you been working with this group, and what is the message behind this group? Like, who are the people that they help?
Operation Barbecue Relief, I've been involved since I got in early in 2018. And I got into it through doing competitions. I met a couple guys that were organizing a competition, and they were involved in the organization. They talked about it. I liked what they did. And we needed people in the area. So one of my positions is actually area coordinator for Connecticut. So whenever there's something in Connecticut, I kind of head it up. So basically, we had the Hurricane Henri was coming. It was, you know, heading towards us and Long Island, everything like that. So I was making calls, setting up, where we were going to have our site, and contacting all the emergency managers in the area and monitoring everything to make sure, and getting equipment. We had equipment coming from Kansas City, from Memphis, everywhere was heading towards Connecticut. And then Henri just died. It just hit Block Island and fizzled out. So basically all the equipment turned around and they headed towards Waverly, Tennessee, which where they were having flooding. So that's my main job is Connecticut area coordinator. I also just started new position is FAST team. And well, what FAST team does is we go in, we set the site up, and then we go in and we break the site down. So we're first in, last out. And it's just, it's great. And we were just down in Hammond, Louisiana. We served about 275,000 meals. And the big message with OBR is we serve the one hot meal that matters. And we just go out and go out in the field and bring meals to people. And there's nothing like, you know, bringing a hot meal to these people and the joy that it brings to them and the see the look on their face and the appreciation. And it just, you there's no better feeling than that.
Man, hell yeah.
That's amazing right there. That really
and
is.
Hell yeah. And the organization, we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary. We've since we've started, which has started with a couple of barbecue guys out in Missouri, Joplin, Missouri was the first deployment, and they got together for a tornado and they started serving barbecue and they just were onto something. And, you know, it's grown to where we just surpassed 9.5 million meals.
Unbelievable. Damn. And what a great style of food that you can make a lot of, you know, to serve a lot of people. It's just delicious.
Yeah. We serve, you know, we do try to do a variety of food. Every day is different. We do, we call one pot meals, which is a protein, rice and vegetable. We'll do pork loin, pork butts, turkey, sausage, whatever we can get from the warehouse and get donated. And we cook it and send it out to the people and, you know, give them the one hot meal that matters.
Man, I love that, the one hot meal that matters. Dan, can you throw the plugs out there so people can learn how to get involved with helping out with Operation Barbecue Relief?
Absolutely, absolutely. You can find our man's man, Tony Olive. You can check his IG at Backdraft Barbecue 1. We really want you to check out OperationBarbecueRelief.org. You could go on there. You could volunteer. If you want to donate, go to Amazon Smile. Throw some donations in there. Help them out any way you can.
Yeah, that Amazon Smile is a really cool thing, Tony. That's a great way to get stuff in there. Hey, talk about some of the ways people can volunteer to help. Maybe they won't, they can't deploy out there with you, but what can they do?
We have, you know, the first thing we want to do is you want to download the OBR Volunteers app on your phone. You download that, then you can register as a volunteer, and it's pretty simple. You do an arbitration agreement, a background check, and then once you're registered, then from the app, any event that comes up will pop up on your phone, and you can apply to that event to help it. And we just don't do deployments. We do what we call Blue Sky Day events. We're doing an event down next week in Fayetteville, North Carolina at the VA hospital where they're dedicating a Medal of Honor wall. And so we're going to cook some meals for the veterans down there.
Nice.
We do something called Barbecue Basics, which is we go in. It's a two-day course where we teach a group to barbecue on day one and then they have a little competition day two. We just did probably 2 months ago, we were in Martinsburg, West Virginia at the VA hospital. And we were working with a bunch of veterans that were down there for PTSD and a bunch of various other injuries and stuff like that treatment. And there's, you know, various ways we do a lot of feedings. But, you know, you don't have to deploy. We have what's called virtual volunteers. So we have people when we're on deployment that are back working on the computer, helping us out in the field. So there's various ways that you can help. So it's not just, you don't have to worry about, I can't deploy. There's numerous ways but the first way is register as a volunteer, and that just opens the door for you and shows what OBR is all about.
Yeah, you just download that app. I'm going to check that out myself. I think it's a really great thing, Jeffy. I mean, can you imagine?
Dude, so cool.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows, again, we talk about all the time the power of food. And, you know, like Tony said, the one hot meal that matters. I think that's really great. Tony, talk about some of the numbers that you guys have served, because I think these are the most staggering part. When we talked this morning, you were telling me some of them, and it was really just, I mean, it's jarring to hear the numbers that you served.
Yeah, my first deployment was Fort Lauderdale, which was actually the disaster was in the Bahamas. And so we thought about it, and we figured out a way to get meals out there. And we had there was an old, I think it was a DC-10. It was called Miss Montana. It was an old military plane. It came off the line just as the war ended, so it didn't go into, you know, military. And a foundation has it, and we were shipping meals over there by plane every day. And we ended up sending 88,000 meals over to the Bahamas.
88,000 meals, Jeffy. That's crazy.
That is amazing. That's amazing. I mean, Tony, how many guys had to work on that to get 88,000 meals? Like, how many people were on that team, do you think?
We probably had between sides and proteins and everything, we probably had 15, 20 people.
Holy shit.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, you guys are hardcore, baby. That is intense.
It's the amount of volunteers fluctuates, you know, per day, per time of the day. But, you know, our big cookers, we can do, you know, talking pork butts, you can do 80 pork butts in one cooker. And we have one trailer. We have five cookers mounted on it.
Oh, my God. That thing is massive.
Shit. Holy cow. Yeah. That's insane.
How many pit masters would you have running that? Would just one guy be in charge with some people helping him? Or is there, like, each person kind of has their own cooker?
What we do is we have – there's a head of culinary, and then there's couple guys under him. And then at a deployment, each area has a lead. So the protein, which would be all the smokers, there's one lead doing that. And then he'll have how many other people we can have, you know, 5-10 people under him, depending on how many cookers we are going. Then we'll have a size lead. So they're in charge of all the tilt skillets for doing all the vegetables and stuff like that. So depending on the size of deployment, how many volunteers we get in that day, but there's usually a lead for each of the main things, the protein and the sides. But we have the one guy head of culinary. He oversees everything, make sure, you know, everything happens, make sure that the meals are coordinated when the meals come in, the meal orders come in, that we have enough product on site to cook the meals.
So just talk a little bit about that process and that the 88,000 meals over how long of a period of time was that?
88,000. That was, I think that was a 3-week period, I think. I think back.
That's crazy.
Last year was a busy year for us because it started with the tornadoes in Nashville. And then we went to up to Cedar Rapids, which I had never heard of. A lot of people never heard of it. It was called the Derecho.
Okay.
And what they were, straight line winds. It's like they say it's a hurricane without tidal surge.
Wow.
And it wiped out, like, I think 70% of the corn crops and just decimated the place. And then we went from Cedar Rapids to Lake Charles. Then we went from Lake Charles to Orange Beach. Then we went back to Lake Charles.
So do they put you up for this too? When you come down, do they put you in a hotel or something?
In Cedar Rapids, we got our first bunkhouse, which has 13 little bunk rooms in it. So everyone gets their own little space. So it's like a mini hotel room, no bathroom or anything, but it has a bed and a little place you can charge your phone, climate control, just change your clothes, just get away from everything. Okay. And when we went to Lake Charles, they purchased a second one. So now we have two of them. So basically, you know, we have capacity for probably, you know, 25 volunteers to sleep on site.
So these bunkhouses aren't stationary. They move.
Yeah, it's a big trailer.
Wow.
And they get towed from, you know, site to site. They get, you know, stored in Kansas City is our main warehouse. They get stored, everything gets stored there. And then it just gets moved to a deployment and we, you know, bring everything in. We have a command center, which is an old NASCAR trailer that gets pulled in. We have another trailer. It's an old big moving trailer that has all, we call it kitchen support trailer, has all supplies in it. One of our big smoker trailers called Boss Hog has five smokers and a generator on it. So it's like self-supporting.
Boss hog.
Man. So what about having volunteers or guys who are, you know, chefs and people who have some skills cooking? I mean, I'm guessing those are people you'd like to have as volunteers, right? Or do they get annoying they know everything?
No, everyone, you know, does their thing. And it's if you have some experience, it's very helpful in certain things because they'll, you know, put you in a more a leadership role. And you can help the people, whereas, you know, basically like in a restaurant, you have a sous chef and you have a main chef. So it does help. We don't get, you know, because you're not really cooking these exotic meals. It's pretty straightforward. But sometimes you're, you know, if you give someone the recipe on something, they can, you know, we're making, you know, 50 gallons of gravy. So you got to bump up the recipe from a small to large. So having some knowledge
helps,
you know, helps. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it's, we don't, you know, we have people from all walks of life, all ages, So it's just it's great, and you meet a lot of great people from all over the country, and it's a fantastic organization. I made friends, and you miss seeing people, and you see people usually under the worst conditions. But like I said, we have the Blue Sky Day programs, which are great, and we're trying to do more and more of those with the feedings. We did one last year at Fort Bragg. We fed kind of like the one we did at Santa Q, but Fort Bragg we fed 5,000.
Golly.
So it's it's they do a lot of good, and you come back from a deployment, you feel good. I mean, it's no feeling like it.
Man, I can imagine. So Jeff, Dan, I got to ask you guys, because I hear these numbers, and he's talking about going to Fort Bragg and serving 5,000 people. The first thing my head goes to is, okay, how do you maintain the quality and the integrity for 5,000 of those? I mean, what do you guys think are some of the issues that could come up against when you hear that?
Some of the issues, like keeping
like
it,
the first thing that pops in your head, he says, I'm feeding 5,000 people. Like, your first thing is, okay, we need, or what happens when?
5,000 people, we need a plan. I mean,
time and temperature off the bat, like how are we keeping it hot?
There you go. You're with me, Dan.
Keeping the integrity of the food, how we're going to make sure we get it to them, like, hot, ready to go. Are we going to cool it first and then reheat it? Like,
those Tony, so just thinking time and temperature and just, keeping things safe. How hard is that to do when you're doing 5,000 people?
It sounds like it's harder than it is, but with, all the smokers, we're cooking, the meat, and the meat's finishing all about the same time. And then, depending on what we're doing, it goes into Cambrose, and the Cambrose will hold the temperature
12 hours
for, it's incredible. I mean, we had, we had these Cambrose, and we sent the stuff over the Bahamas, and that temperature, we always temp it. We're very food safe. Most of the guys that are doing the main stuff are food, serve safe food manager. And so we're, 100% safe. We don't want anybody getting sick. So we're temping all that food. And if something's bad, we're not serving it. So we're very critical on that. And, we make sure that everything stays, at temperature and, right from, to keeping it cold to when it's served, and they get a hot meal.
Man, what an amazing group there. Dan, throw those plugs out for him, if you don't mind, again for us.
Absolutely, yes. Tony Olive. My man is doing it big. Check him out on IG, Black Backdraft Barbecue 1. And then you have to go check out OperationBarbecueRelief.org. If you're listening to this right now, go check out OperationBarbecueRelief.org. Go download the app for Operation Barbecue Relief. You want to donate? Donate. Go Amazon Smile. Hook them up. Send them some money. They need these Cambros to keep the shit hot. They need some stuff going on. Do what you got to do, man, because, they're doing it big. This is incredible. Just hearing these numbers, I'm just like, damn, how they doing it? Whatever. You gotta do what you got to do, man. This is fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty intense to hear these numbers, Tony. So some of the food you guys serve, you talked about the brisket. You talked about doing some pork butts. What's some of the other foods that you guys serve? Or is there like a set, okay, we have to serve a side of starch and a protein. Like, how does that work for each meal? Or is it different every time?
Well, it's
a standard is what I was looking for. Standard.
We always have a protein. We always have a vegetable. We try to have a starch. So it's a lot of the times we're serving rice. When we get dead bulk, it's easy to cook in bulk. And then we're doing, the veggies could be green beans and corn. So those are kind of our two staple vegetables that we get. But it depends on what's available. And then proteins, it really depends on, what we get from, we get Prairie Fresh Equipment stuff, Butterball, they'll bring in a tractor trailer load of food. So it's sometimes we don't always know what we get, but, it could be turkey breast, turkey loins, ground turkey, chicken.
So what do you do when you get like a ground turkey? What do? Make a meatloaf and smoke it, or?
No, actually we'll cook that. That'll go into a one pot meal.
Like a chili or something.
The protein, rice, and a vegetable.
No sauce?
And there's a little, we have some gravy in there too. And it's a nice, satisfying meal. But we'll do, pork loins, like I said, pork butts, it really depends on, you know, what we get and, you know, what we can source at the time. Because sometimes before our stuff gets on site, we'll go to Restaurant Depot or Costco or something and say, okay, you know, how much, what do you got in stock? And we'll take, you know, whatever they have and start with that and then move on. So we try to adapt with what we can get source, you know, immediately.
How hard is it to get donations? Do you know any part of that that part of the business?
Donations come pretty, you know, like I said, like, you know, they mentioned the Amazon Smile. That thing is pretty much,
donations are product.
Oh, product. Not that hard really. Cause we've partnered up with a lot of, you know, these companies and we make a call to them and, you know, they get stuff to us and it's great. It's, you know, just they realize the mission and they want to be part of it and help out. And it just, you know, everyone comes together and it just works out so easy.
Well, you should call Jeffy because he's got stuff in his refrigerator at work. He could probably
always.
Well, man, what an amazing group of people and what an amazing charitable work that you guys are doing, helping people. And it just shows how powerful food is. And I'm sure you've seen that firsthand, Tony, just how powerful that can be.
Oh, the first time I went on the field to deliver the meals, it just, you know, really hit me. It's like they always say in the organization, you always find your why. And it was that was my why. It was when I was bringing the meals to those people. But, you know, we did during COVID, we had to adapt because we couldn't deploy so many places and came out with it's called the Restaurant Relief Program, which we were able to do in multiple places. And that's what ramped our meal count up because we hit 3,000 meals in 2018 in Fort Lauderdale. And from that to now, we went, you know, hit 9.5 million. So, I mean, that's not a lot of time to ramping up the meals.
Wow. I mean, Jeffy, this is just, I mean, it's incredible to hear these numbers and see this.
It's incredible.
Kind of work, isn't it?
It's inspiring. I mean, it's.
He doesn't get paid to do this. He's just doing
it. No, that's what I mean. It's just like this is a really great thing happening here. I mean, this is like the fact that everyone goes down there, donates their time. There's all these people donating food and it's going out to the people who really need it. And I'm just blown away at the commitment that everyone's shown in this thing. It's like to go from 3,000 meals to 9 million plus.
Crazy.
Is insane.
It's
a lot
of food.
You know.
And we do it, you know, everything. Like we did one, about a year and a half ago. A group of Marines came home from a deployment. So it was similar to the Santa Queue. And we went up there and we cooked barbecue for them and their families. And it was only 300 people, but it was a small one. But, you know, we do various sizes for whatever. Or you know, and we try to take care of military veterans, first responders. And when we go on these deployments, we're feeding the people that have gotten displaced or are in shelters. We're feeding the first responders. We're feeding the service workers that are coming from out of state to repair all the power lines, everything like that. So we're feeding everybody. Anybody that needs a meal, we're getting them food.
I love it, man. That is fantastic. Hey, we had a good time with that Santa Queue event we did, huh? That was fun.
Oh, that was a blast. That kind of, you know, that started off the whole thing for me kind of because it was just doing that was just, it was just incredible. I mean, I just, you know, the feeling I got after that was just, you felt so good for, you know, we worked our butt off, but I mean, it was just, you could just see the how happy everybody, I mean, and you know, with them, I mean, you know, they gave us, you know, chef's jackets and had our name tags made up, and it was just, it was
the
awesome.
The coins, remember?
Yep, the coins, yep.
I mean, what
I still got mine.
You mentioned coins is OBR has, we have coins for certain things, and what we do is with volunteers is it's called caught doing something good. And we present that person if they, you know, we see them doing an outstanding job or something, we want to reward them, we give them a coin.
Hey, that's pretty
and,
cool.
And so it's pretty cool. We did last year, we went down to the Super Bowl and Guy Fieri and Aaron May were doing a tailgate, big VIP tailgate party. And they're big supporters of OBR. And they had us come down and we cooked 300 racks of baby back ribs.
Nice. That's fun.
For the VIP party. So that was fun. But you get guys like that are big supporters of OBR. And it's just, you know, it's great.
Man, I mean, is there ranks amongst the OBR? Because it kind of feels military-ish.
Yeah, it is and it isn't. Our chief of programs is actually he's a wounded warrior, and he's a retired Green Beret from the Army.
Wow.
And so it has that little bit of a feel to it, but we, you know, you have the head of culinary, chief of programs, that type of thing, and then we have director of, we have a whole org chart with director of operations, director of disasters, head of VOAD, you know, marketing. And, you know, we have all these different positions that we have some paid employees because you need to,
of course,
because there's so much time. And then just on the sites, you have, you know, site lead, volunteer lead, culinary lead. And so you have those type of things.
Well, I'm just curious.
It is somewhat like that.
Where is your rank in the mix now?
Well, when I get on, I'm what's called a core volunteer, because I'm a state lead. So I'm a little bit higher, up there than a regular volunteer. But I do just, you know, the same stuff that they'll do depending on what the role is. But I've been doing more of my fast team, which is, you know, the group was going in and out. So we're like a whole different, we're like a little, you know, like our own little unit that goes in.
Like the Navy SEALs. Like, they send a small group in to take them out.
Pretty much, yeah. We just go in, set up, and then we leave, and then we go back and take it down and then leave. And that's how it's. So, you know, within our group, everyone's pretty much equal within our group. We have one guy that leads the group, and then we all just go in there and do our thing.
Man, it's just amazing, Dan, just to hear these stories. And you hear someone working like this and what they're doing. And Dan, you're our official military expert on the show because you're former military. It kind of feels military the way he talks about it, at least to me, don't you think?
Yeah, you always got to have like a chain of command just because
the brigade.
You know, you need that person that's going to come out and kind of talk to people and make sure, you know, you got everything lined up and stuff. But I think it's like a really a no ego thing where you got everybody just kind of pushing forward, doing their thing. And there isn't really necessarily need to be more than somebody that's going, okay, we're going to set up here. And then everyone's like, all right, cool. And then everybody just does their job. So it's just more of a, when there's no egos involved, it's a lot easier to kind of just come in and just hand you a business. But yeah, it definitely does have that military.
Yeah, it's a good thing, I think. Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Well, Tony, I got to ask you, man, because you are an expert when it comes to the world of barbecue. You've done a lot of stuff. You've run your own stuff. You've worked with greats like Myron Mixon. Give us a couple of barbecue tips that, you know, maybe people don't know about, a little tricks or something, like especially during the wintertime.
One of the biggest tips that, you know, people don't realize is when you're doing ribs, pull the membrane off the back of the ribs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that makes Amen. All the difference in the world.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've also heard some people who don't do that, and I don't understand why. They're like, well, it helps it stay together as it's cooking, but it's gross.
And they claim, you know, if you cook them at a certain temperature, it breaks down and it keeps the moisture in. But now you pull the membrane off, you rub both sides, and you'll get flavor in both sides. That's really it. You know, people that don't have smokers or things like that, you can, you know, make a little foil pack, or they buy these little smoker boxes and you can put chips in there and you can still get the smoke flavor and that way. Or if you're doing it in your house, you can buy liquid smoke and you'll still get that, you know, that same flavor. But
those little smoker boxes work well.
Oh, they work fantastic. And, you know, there's a various amount of you know, different types of smokers out there, and grills. You got pellet ones, which are really easy to use. I have several pellet ones. And it's, you know, you look online, take classes. If, you know, we're trying to do we've been talking about it up at Ergo Chef, trying to do a little backyard barbecue class.
Oh, yeah.
And just with COVID coming up and down, it's trying, you know, we're trying to work that out. But I'm trying to get some classes up there because I think it'll be good for the area. I think that's the biggest one that blows people's minds is you do, you know, take the membrane off the ribs and just, and never boil ribs, never boil ribs. boil hot dogs, not ribs. There's my bumper sticker.
I love it.
But it's just, you know, it's barbecue is just your, you know, you make it what you want. Another one that that's a great one for home is I like ribeyes, which is, it's a good cut of meat, nice marbling, is reverse sear. It makes all the difference in the world. A lot of people don't know about that. And reverse sear is what you do is you cook it at a low temperature, about 180 degrees for about an hour until you get to about 110 degrees internal temperature. Then you crank your grill up and my grill goes to 700 degrees and you sear the outside and you will have an amazing steak.
Boom. I like that tip right there. That's a great tip. Dan, throw his plugs out there before we get Tony out of here. He's sitting at an event in Georgia. We got to get him to go hang out with his friends and stop talking to us.
absolutely. So go catch Tony Olive. Catch him at IG at Backdraft Barbecue 1 and go support him and the good people over at OperationBarbecueRelief.org. Go in there, check them out. They got merch. They got cookbooks. They got shirts. They got hats. They got aprons. They got patches. So you can go buy some shit. You can go check them out. You can send out some money, some Amazon Smile for donations. Sorry, I'm when I'm passionate about something, I swear, I'm sorry.
You go buy some shit.
It's the whole army. It's the whole army in me. You know what I'm saying? That's how we do. You gotta express it with love.
And I hear you.
Sprinkle a little cuss words out there. But yeah, I'm just saying, you gotta check them out. This big things. That's all
there,
I'm saying.
There it is.
And we also, another thing we have is Lowe's is carrying the Operation Barbecue Relief line of rubs.
Oh, I was going to ask about the rubs. Yeah.
I think it's $1 from each bottle goes to the OBR.
Are they
and
good?
What's cool about it is they're really good. They got a mojo rub that's like fantastic on fish. What's cool about it is each bottle has a picture from a deployment, and on the bottle it tells you about that deployment.
Oh, that's cool.
So each one has a story, but yeah, the rubs are really, really good. They got a lot of good rubs. Yeah. I think there's like 9 of them, and another way to support OBR.
I love
it. Yeah, they got the website is cool. The cookbook they have is has all recipes from all pitmasters have won grand championships, stuff like that. Wow. They have videos online. You can learn about barbecue. They have an online barbecue academy, and we got celebrities like I mentioned. Guy Fieri and Aaron May. Mike Golick is a big supporter of ours.
Raider.
Yep.
You're a passionate guy. You're a passionate guy.
I'm passionate about it. Things that I really, feel strongly about, food and helping people.
And the occasional cocktail here and there, right? Who cares? That's good for you.
You got it.
Yo, Tony, we appreciate you. Thank you for all the hard work you're doing, man. Look forward to talking to you on down the road.
Great. Thank you, guys. It was great talking to you, and hope to talk to you again.
Absolutely, brother. We miss you. We hope to do something with you here soon. All right?
Take care, Tony.
All right, Tony.
All right. There he goes. The one, the only, Tony Olive. That guy's a legend.
Hell yeah. Yo, listen, clap. Round of applause for that man.
Absolutely. Yo.
That fucking guy right there.
He's a fucking legend, yeah. Man.
Dude, them and Operation Barbecue Relief, they deserve a round of applause. I mean, 9.5 million meals. That is so awesome.
Incredible.
Just reeling by that number. It's like so hard to comprehend that much food.
Yeah, I mean.
What, 2017?
Yeah.
Wow, it's not even that old. That's crazy. Yeah, big shout out to Tony. He's traveling. He's in Georgia right now for a competition, which is pretty cool, too. We didn't talk about competitions with him, but he does a lot of those as well. Really talented barbecue guy. I think when we did Santa Q, I was so overwhelmed with everything else, I didn't realize the level of skill in our pit masters that we had until I went outside and saw what he was doing. I was like, oh, shit, this dude's a fucking G.
Yeah. Yeah.
Handling it. He brought in them burnt ends. I was in heaven. I love that man.
Those things were good too, man.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, there it is. Big shout out, Tony Olive. Make sure you check out Operation Barbecue Relief. Help those guys out. They're doing amazing things. Well, boys, it's about getting time to end this program. We got about 5 minutes left. We got to talk about what we learned this week in food. Jeffy, you want to go first? You want me to go first? Or you can dictate who goes first?
I'll go first. All right. I didn't learn a whole lot.
Why are you going first then?
All right, you go first.
Jesus, Jeffy. You learned something? I did. And what I learned is not going to be a fun conversation. It's going to be a sad conversation. And it really was quite upsetting. On NPR, we did a show about indigenous peoples and Thanksgiving and talking about food. And I spoke to a lot of Native Americans, some people from the Mohican tribe, some people from the Mohican Pequot, some people from the Navajo, real like anthropologists, historians, chefs. And I'll tell you what, boys, after having the conversations I've had, I am 100% not kidding. This is a complete shoot. This is not a work. I don't know if my family is going to do Thanksgiving anymore. It doesn't feel right to me. And, you know, I like the celebration of family. I like the celebration of being together and of the seasons. But Thanksgiving, you know, it's taught differently now than it was to us when we were in school with the pilgrims and everybody shaking hands and having turkey together on one big meal. That's not how it went down. And, you know, it was a bloody massacre and people getting things stolen from them and their land and women getting raped. It's not good. And it's something that I don't think should be celebrated and talked about in the way that it is. But I do know they teach kids differently now than they did when we were in school, which is a good thing. But it affected me a lot. And in the show today, I do a little I do talk about that because it truly I've never had something that I've done in this industry like that affect me the way that did. And
I think the narrative that you're describing of like the pilgrims and the Indians and how they had like a beautiful meal together has been, you know, kind of changed.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know about your house. We don't talk about that at my house for Thanksgiving. You know what I mean? That's not.
So we still on or what?
Nah, it's my speaker's reading reconnecting nonstop. So that's it for the program.
You started talking about Thanksgiving in the
and we're back. We are back live right here. We had some internet connection issues apparently. I don't really know what happened there. I think internet blew up my house, but we'll pick it right back up there, Jeffy, because you were saying about Thanksgiving, how it's not really celebrated like that so much anymore. And if I need to go hit, I can pop in here and do a little edit on that. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I was just basically saying that, and then me and Dan were having an interesting conversation when it all had crashed, and it was just that, you know, that's not the narrative anymore. The narrative of Native Americans and pilgrims getting together and having a beautiful meal and you know, us swapping recipes and stuff like that. You know, that's not real, and we need to recognize that that's not real. And in my house, it's more about counting your blessings and being thankful and family. You know, we've kind of changed the whole narrative. You know, we don't talk about Native Americans and pilgrims and any of that kind of stuff. I mean, if anything, we could probably all take a moment of silence for the Native Americans who lost their lives during that time, because it was really, really not good.
I agree completely. That's a really great way to look at it, Jeffy, and I actually really appreciate that. These conversations affected me, man, and I've never had something hit me that way. Like I've never felt legitimately like I need to say sorry. You know, I didn't do it. No one in my family did anything to do, but I just felt like as a, you know, a Caucasian person that, I don't know, like that was so fucked up. And
damn,
it just goes to show you how dumb people were back then. I don't know, man. Anyway,
to continue the bullshit. Like it's bring it out in the light and talk about it and make it to what it is. And
we ain't never gonna get through it or get better unless we talk about it.
You're right.
We have to talk about it. And it's not being racist. There's nothing wrong with being racial when you talk.
You got to put it out there. I was saying that you guys probably don't realize that my family is Native American. My wife and her family is Native to the Mexican region of North America. And so my kids and my wife, they have the Native American blood. So I encourage them to really dig deep into their heritage. We did a whole ancestry.com, and they found out like where they're from, and they know all the roots. So they've been really looking into who they really are and where they're from. And that's an important part of really understanding America and what it is and where it came from. And unfortunately, there's a super dark history. Yeah, it's unfortunately it's a very dark history, and only thing you could do about it now is make it so that everyone understands like what the truth behind it is.
Right.
And really see what we can do to make things better.
Absolutely. And I'm not trying to be a jerk here to you, Dan, but Jeffy, don't you feel like every time we talk about some sort of race on the program, Dan chimes in. He's like, well, you know, I got 1/8 of that in my family.
Absolutely. Dan's from Bridgeport, and he is a mix of all races.
Yo, I am literally the melting pot. My damn kids got everything. I'll send you their ancestry. They got fucking everything.
That's amazing.
Them motherfuckers got everything.
Well, look.
They're assholes, too. They got it all.
Hey, well, maybe if you're doing Thanksgiving this year with the family, think about that for a minute and enjoy and be thankful for your family and, you know, think about the people who helped make this country what it is and, you know, I don't know. Like I said, it affected me. That's what I learned this week. So, you know, I've taken up a lot of time. I apologize.
No, don't apologize. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that to light. Thank you for having that hard conversation.
Yeah, no, I think it's important that especially us as a bunch of white guys, you know, we need to recognize
well,
that.
Well, you know, white guys and Dan.
Yeah, Dan. Whatever.
No, I'm still white. I just have family. That's
sixth white or something.
Right. I mean, we can make all the racial jokes we want. We have Dan here.
Yeah, we got Dan. Dan's the culture. Dan's our culture.
Yeah.
In the studio.
In the shock jock industry, they call him the culture shield.
Yeah, we call him the culture leg of the show.
I mean, Howard Stern has Robin Quinn, a black woman, on the show. You know, Open Anthony always had Patrice O'Neill.
I never figured that out. Oh man.
So then they can make all the jokes they want.
That's great. So we need to get a black person so we can make. Some
we got
jokes.
One. We got Dan. Don't we?
All right. So.
He's a black native, though. He's, like, different.
Well, he's a black native Spanish guy with Hungarian roots and Irish history.
Tiny bit of... And Korean through marriage.
He does have some Korean in there, too. A little Korean through marriage. And I also heard that he's got some New Zealand and Australian cousins that may have come back once reserved or whatever.
A little bit of everything.
Dan, what'd you learn this week? Make it quick, because I've taken up too much time.
Absolutely. So, I learned that... fish farms aren't all bad.
No?
There's a very terrible stigma against fish farms. And yes.
Well, I know mussel farm, like farming mussels is a good thing. They clean the ocean. They're very, like, sustainable.
Shellfish.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, yes, absolutely. They absolutely are. But when you talk about salmon and you talk about Arctic char and you talk about bronzino, like a lot of them have the stigma that they're terrible, and I'll tell you, a good amount of them, the ones that are situated in the oceans and situated in the water directly, are terrible for the ecosystem. But now there's companies out there, like this place I actually went to, the fish farm out in Waterbury. They have Ideal Fish, and they're out there, and they basically set up
we're gonna try to get this guy on the show, aren't we?
Yeah. It's they do recirculating agricultural systems, and basically it's a 99% of the water that they use is reusable. They're able to take all the waste from the fish and turn it into compost. The fish live a relatively healthy life. They are taken care of to the fullest. They live in a system where they're bred, they're grown, they're sent over from one tank to another. And
does this affect the cost dramatically?
Actually, it actually seems to be cheaper, crazy enough, because they're easier to maintain, because it's such it's in such an isolated area. Like
it's probably less waste.
Factory, there's no waste. They're able to reuse everything. The most expensive cost really is the food. And they get, they're working on the food. The food, if you read the food, it would be like, oh, what is this shit? But when they break it down to you and you go, oh, but wild salmon. Well, what is wild salmon eating? If you got fish that's coming out the ocean, what's in the ocean? Not the best. And they're taking in everything. So it could be in plastics. It could be in fucking whatever, you know. This is controlled environments allowing them to, they can tell you exactly what the fish is eating. So even though there's this huge stigma against farm-raised fish, this is a sustainable ecosystem that is allowing for fish to be grown properly, much more cheaply, sustainable, and could feed a lot more people. And they're just getting started. Like, this is very, like, they've been working on it since about 2013, and there's different farms, there's different places that are doing the same type of thing. Yeah. They have a sister company, Sustainable Blue. They have a couple different fish farms, but they're all kind of working together now, trying to do things. I just found out that there's a in Japan, they do this tuna. They raise tuna in these giant tanks, and they're trying to give them this like farm raised tuna. And actually,
you know who gets that? You know who Aki gets that?
Oh, does he? Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, that Laberna
Denny. Dan, have you ever heard of Vetta La Palma? Vetta La Palma?
I have not.
Vetta La Palma is exactly what you're talking about in Spain. They have an aquaculture like that. It's like 11,000 hectares or something like that.
Wow.
That it's like a man-made place, and they put fish in it, and they don't feed them anything. In fact, they've made it such a natural habitat. They plan on losing 20% of everything because of predators and all this kind of stuff. That I think it was last year or the year before, it's actually now the largest bird sanctuary in the world because it's such a healthy place. And they pull something like 1,200 tons of like sea bass, bream, mullet, shrimp, and something else out of that farm. I think fish farming is actually the future, to be honest. I mean, because the oceans are getting, with microplastics and all the other things that are in them, it's getting harder and harder to get good fish. You know, like mercury's at an all-time high.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty crazy. So,
man,
absolutely.
Yeah. Damn, you guys dropping knowledge with that one, Jeff. You chimed in with that too. That's pretty cool. I'm gonna check that out.
It's funny
out,
that he brought this up because I just one of the guests that I'm trying to get on the show. This other chef, he just recently told me about this, and it blew my mind. And I was like, whoa. But anyway, I just wanted to chime in with my two cents.
Yeah, very, very cool. Well, Dan, that's awesome. We're going to check that out and hopefully get that guy on the show because I'd love to talk to him. What a very cool thing to talk about, especially from a chef point of view. So,
hell yeah. Thank you.
All right. You guys want to hear mine? Because it's not very good compared to your guys'.
Oh, boy.
It's just not that good. It's not as cool. You guys are so cool. You guys have, like, deep shit and, like, stuff that matters. And I saw... Hey! You turn that shit off? I saw... You son of a bitch.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Sorry. My fault.
So, on the ISS, on the International Space Station...
No, you can get to it in about 28 minutes.
They grew hatch chilies in space.
That's pretty cool.
And they made space tacos. First ever space tacos. It kind of blew my mind. I was like, growing chilies in space. It was like yesterday, I think. It was like I saw it tweeted out. I was like, what?
And that's kind of like cool.
Went down the rabbit hole with it, and apparently it's the fourth experiment they've done of trying to like cultivate different things, and it was really challenging, but it worked out really well. And I saw pictures of the hatch chilies, and they were gorgeous. I was like, whoa, it's pretty wild.
Damn, I want some space hatch chilies. That sounds dope.
Space I know.
Tacos.
I'm gonna get some space hatch chilies. I'm gonna get me some farm raised fish, and I'm gonna celebrate. Thanks, Fishing Day. That's something we'll celebrate.
On Mars.
It's the future.
That's my new shit right there. Well, there you go, friends. That's what we learned this week in culinary. Big shout out to our friend Tony Alla from Backdraft Barbecue and Operation Barbecue Relief joining us on the program. For Chef Dan, for Chef Jeff, I'm Chef Plum. We'll see you guys next week. We appreciate you. Remember, food is the most important thing we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. Let's make sure we give the time it deserves. We'll see you later. Check out Seasoned.
From the Tower of Power, too sweet to be sour, I'm funky like a monkey. Sky's the limit and space is the place.
Thank you for listening to Plum Love Foods Live. See you next week, good brothers and sisters.